Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Art and Labor, where the podcast on the ongoing struggle to survive as an art and or cultural worker. I am OK Fox.
And I'm Lucia Love, and we are joined here today by a very special guest. A super duper mega special awesome guest who is a filmmaker and artist and activist and all around awesome person. Do you wanna?
That's better than my mom ever did. my name is Zephyr Throwell, and I'm certainly not deserving of that introduction. Thank you.
Dude, I just love you.
We got buds in the house, and buds who are extremely knowledgeable about loft law. Yeah, I mean, for people who maybe aren't in New York City or a city with a lot of lofts, there's like sections of Brooklyn mostly and Manhattan
less and less
as time goes on, but artists tend to make housing from repurposed lofts, like things that used to be factories, shops of different sorts, converted into housing, and people live there, and it's constantly people in lofts are constantly threatened with different evictions for different reasons,
or they have issues like the ghost ship fire. Right. That's like
correct.
Big time loft news.
Yeah.
Sometimes the makeshift situations aren't very safe and aren't very regulated. Sometimes it's some weird, shady third party company that are making the lofts and don't really know what they're doing. Sometimes it's artists who don't know what they're doing. It can be.
Sometimes it's everybody who doesn't know what they're doing.
But it's like in a city where affordable housing is scarce. People take it into their own hands and create their own affordability.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it. You know, I've lived in a lot of places in the world, and I've lived in a warehouse or commercial space for the last 25 years. And
people are laughing.
They think that's funny out there.
They're like, 25 years, he's old. I can tell you, having specifically lived in warehouses in Portland, Oregon, and San Francisco, the way New York has treated artists in industrial spaces is much different than those cities. Those cities sent the fire department after you. I remember this one place in Portland, every 6 months we'd get the fire department and they were looking for beds. You know, they were like going through your toiletries, like, why do you have shampoo here? You know, and you're like, what the fuck? You know, get off my back.
I work with this stuff.
I fucking use it for
part of my social practice, actually. This is relational aesthetics.
Right. And then like if you had one extension cord, they'd be like, unsafe, everybody out. You know, fucking ridiculous. Damn. So to move to New York years ago and to live in warehouse spaces, because I think lofts have a bad name, right? When people talk about lofts now, they really talk about like luxury towers.
Yeah.
Because fucking
have rebranded as lofts. Oh, right. God, I wasn't even thinking about that.
Yeah, because fucking That's real estate dream. Stole our name.
Right. I mean, this is classic. We've brought this cartoon on the podcast before. It's this Grayson Perry cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
Of like the process of gentrification.
Yeah, it's sort of like the R. Crumb's history of the United States, where you see the raw formation of the environment is the loft, or it's the fertile ground.
Yeah,
and then eventually it's like so they're building something. I think they're building bicycles.
It starts out.
Yeah. Oh, it's just trammeled, and then it becomes a studio, and then it becomes a coffee shop, and then it becomes deluxe.
luxury
bohemian apartments.
Yeah. But that's kind of like the myth of New York, right? It's just, oh, everyone can come here and they don't have to actually build out a space for themselves, but they can appreciate a little bit of the mythology of all of these like Soho lifestyle, like bohemian flat kind of like big bay windows and...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Target will come to East Village and rebrand itself as like a CBGB's. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, it's just part of the culture.
Yeah, like us on Facebook.
Yeah. And like the Target that's in the East Village is part of a luxury, like a luxury loft building called, and the luxury loft calls itself like EVGB or something.
That's sick, dude. I love things that are sort of reminiscent of a thing that used to be cool.
Yeah.
That's how I like to live my life.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
But it's all like 18
feast on the shadows.
It's all just like these like young NYU students who live there, so they don't even think about it. They don't think about it twice.
No, but they're mad punk rock because they're young.
Oh yeah.
one of the things I think is interesting about the whole idea behind industrial space and living there is that it's demonized as artists pushing other people out. But if our culture valued art at all, we would supply spaces like this for artists anyway, right? Because you need some place where you can make a mess, where it's a big space, where you have a freight elevator, high ceilings to make something big.
And it can be actually safe.
Yeah, right. So our culture, I feel, in many cases in New York as well, has left artists no option but to move into these dilapidated spaces. Like if they had nice new spaces that were subsidized by the government, i.e. Germany and other places, right? Artists would be there. They'd be at the nice place with the good lights and the bathroom.
And they try to do this, right? So they tried, there's an artist building in the East Harlem. The problem with it, and this is true, and I know there's a similar complex in Baltimore, my friend pointed out to me, and other cities I'm sure do this too. Well, they'll have like, it's an affordable artist building, but you have to make at least $50,000 a year.
Right? Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
Great. Who amongst us?
Yeah. It's the same thing with the housing lottery in New York. The average was like, oh, you have to make $50,000 a year and the units are like $2,000 a month or something.
Yeah.
It's just insane. It's not affordable. People.
I won the reverse lottery. I'm screwed. It's I got to say, though, as far as in other cities in the United States, New York, I think, has the best scenario that they came up with for the loft law. I think it was really a winner. Now, it's fucking contentious as hell, right? There's a fight going on right now, raging in New York about it, and all the dirty weapons have come out, who is what skin color and who is displacing who and what is manufacturing and, you know, what does the future of New York look like? Is this what we want for New York? You know, all these cards are on the table.
Because they're pitting the factory workers against you guys, right?
So, so let me give a little history, right? Yeah. A little 101 quick. I won't dawdle.
No, it's good.
To, like, tell, like, what happened with the loft law.
Hit us.
In the 60s in New York City. Soho was the spot. Hard to believe now, right? That fucking Manhattan over there. But Soho was happening at one time. And it was all abandoned warehouse space because Soho used to be called Hell's 100 Acres because it was so fucking rugged there.
Mm. And we got into a little bit of this in our earliest episodes talking about like 112 Green Street and stuff like that.
Yeah, this is like episode 4, the one that we used the Grayson Perry cartoon as the image for it. That's our previous episode that touched on a lot of like artists' living space contentions.
Yeah.
But yeah, keep going. No, I want to hear it.
So we're in the 60s. Everything's great. Pre-hippies, right? We're beatnik still. And manufacturing, moving out en masse, moving to Brooklyn, moving to Jersey, because it's one, it's expensive in Manhattan, but also it's a war zone down there. So all these dilapidated, empty buildings through the 60s and 70s, artists move in. And they're like, hey, it looks good to me. It's cheap. It's not zoned residentially. So the landlord and the tenant make a deal. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I'll pay you this much, and you don't ask any questions, and you know I live here, but we're not going to tell the city, right? Everybody's happy. Then a bunch of artists move in. Manhattan starts to become a little bit nicer downtown, and the landlords are like, all right, time to get out, right? Let's build some real glass towers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So a bunch of artists get together in Soho and in the financial district, Tribeca, and they form what's known as the Lower Manhattan Loft Tenants Association. And they fight like fucking hell. And they get a bunch of politicians involved, and they strike a deal with the city of New York. And the deal is this. Look, the city's not going to fine the landlords for renting illegally, which it's against the law, and there's a big fine for it because it's not safe. And we're not going to evict these tenants. We're going to keep them in their homes because they like living there and they've lived there for a long time. We're going to strike this bargain and they're going to get to apply for coverage. And then the city is going to legalize their space with the landlord and the tenant are going to pay 50% each, right? And we're going to legalize this space. We're going to make it regular rent stabilized housing. Then the landlord wins because their property's worth more because it's residential. And the tenant wins because they get to keep their home and pay a rent stabilized rate. It's a great deal. Let's do it, right? Real estate developers were like, Jesus Christ, no. That means we can't build glass towers.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for many, like small landlords who had a building and had already been renting for years to these tenants were like, great, I get a 50% free renovation of my building that the tenant's going to pay for, you know? So the loft law is born. And it has been since 1982 going on. 2010, they expand the loft law. There's like 6-month window where the Democrats take control of the Senate, right? And they passed a bunch of stuff.
Wait, and, this was what year?
2010.
2010.
Yeah. And they pass the loft law, the new loft law, and that extends out to the boroughs. And that goes, you know, into Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan, Staten Island. And there are lofts all over these places. Now, most of the today that we hear about is North Brooklyn, but the majority of lofts are still in southern Manhattan.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're still there. But also, Tribeca is now the wealthiest neighborhood in the fucking city.
Yeah. I heard De Niro just got pushed out.
Oh, no.
Right? Wow. Oh, displacement.
Yeah. And Goodfellas Diner burned down.
Right?
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Yeah. Connected?
Yeah. Yeah. Look for the signs, people.
Yeah. I'm just saying 1+1.
Yeah. QAnon, get in here.
But yeah, I mean, it sucks because, like, there's still... I mean, now, you know, we got de Blasio and fucking Cuomo, and we had, like, all those years of fucking Bloomberg, where a lot of things that could have been retrofitted into lofts were just, like, torn down and made into these big luxury condos or luxury lofts or whatever the fuck. Yeah, I know in my neighborhood in Ridgewood, there's a bunch of places that I'm thinking of the artist phenomenon is happening, and there was already one that used to be like an artist studio space that was totally torn down and is now like these disgusting luxury apartments.
I've been seeing a little different development in Sunset Park. Like, I live around Industry City, and
Hudson Yards too.
It is completely insane to watch, you know, like
the Statue of Liberty.
To watch the Statue of Liberty,
just look at her
on the horizon.
She's right there.
Look at her, so small and yet so powerful.
I just look up and I cry sometimes.
I cry. You know, oh God!
Just in general,
I'm up all night.
I think about my Jewish ancestors coming to Ellis Island, getting their name changed.
Yeah, yeah. The rules. Everybody filter through the big green lady. Yeah.
I love her though. I gotta say,
she's great.
She's hot.
She is super hot. Have you noticed that? I was like, that's my kind of lady.
I love the protester who climbed her.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just so like, that's fit. Hot.
Yeah. It's like, you can't catch this person. She's too strong.
But yeah, you're an industry city. What have you noticed?
Yeah, what's going on over there?
Yeah, so it's been weird because years ago I would go on studio visits there, and all of the spaces, even like 5 years ago, just going to visit, everything was unfinished. Industry City was a ghost town. And now within the past 2 years, it's not even residential spaces anymore. It's like, oh, you had a workspace? Well, now it's a design within reach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is that?
It's a, like, it used to be that people manufactured furniture there, and now it's like designers from outside bringing in stuff to a showroom.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah.
I'll tell you a little story. my friend Dirk Skreber, he's a painter, right? Famous painter, fucking superstar in Germany.
Yeah, he rules.
Came over here, ripped it up. He got a whole floor over in Industry City back in fucking, I forget when it was, like 90s, maybe early 2000s. Insane place, super cheap, beautiful. He gets pushed out because he can't afford it and the rent's going through the roof. Ends up leaving, going back to Germany. And I'm at a Christmas party like a year ago for the company that bought my movie, right? And I'm like, oh man, sweet view. How do I know this view? This is fucking Dirk Skreber's studio that he got pushed out of, right?
Fucking movie like, money.
And just like ratchet up, right? And then I'm talking to the movie company. They're like, it's very expensive here. We don't know if we can stay here. And you're like, what the fuck? You know, like there is no hope for like small artists.
No,
even
it's
successful
nuts.
Artists get pushed out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's completely insane. And then people who had businesses there and lived in the neighborhood, you know, they maybe got a house because the neighborhood's mostly, you know, it's like pretty ethnically diverse and there's just a lot of families who live there. It's not ever been a hip place for, you know, millennials to move or whatever. But now all these people are just like, what? I bought this apartment and I worked here and now my livelihood is disrupted. Yeah. Like, do I sell my house and start again? Do I like just scrap everything and protest Industry City, which has been going on? I wonder if it'll continue though, because people have just sort of like petered out as of last year. There was a really like meager presence of like the crowd that was talking just about against displacement. Like,
I think that a week or two ago, the city council person who I forget, maybe it's Espinal, I forget. Who's the city council person down there? Is holding a big public hearing and rally about what's going on there and how what they're going to do. And this is the most important part to people listening. If you live in New York City, this is a ball that is in the air right now, and it matters. Your voice directly matters. Like, we watch tenants organize and fight back and win, and that's what's about to happen. We're about to pass a new law that is being really fucking, we're just getting hammered with some controversy, but it's looking like it will pass soon. And this is to reopen the Loft Law, which is lapsed because of real estate pressure. They closed it, so people living in industrial spaces can't apply right now.
Right.
So we are reopening this and making a new law that is more inclusive, that protects more people's homes. But what matters are people showing up and yelling. Right? People, people showing up, yelling, posting on fucking Twitter, which every goddamn politician looks at. It makes me sick. They put out official announcements on Twitter now, not on like a government website or something like that.
No, everybody's got a Twitter.
Right? And they're like,
It's direct democracy, man. Twitter.
What's amazing though, right, is like you
except sex workers. No sex workers.
You have to get this social media app in order to participate in democracy now. It's wild. You know?
It is wild. Yeah.
Are you on Twitter right now?
You are. Oh my God. Because I was trying to catch up the latest thing I saw about Espinal, but I can't find it.
I think it's Espinal. I might be wrong about that.
But yeah, we've talked about this before, but people should follow my local tennis union is Ridgewood Tennis Union, and they have a great Twitter.
Wait. Rochelle?
Raquel.
Yes. Yeah, and she's great.
She's so great.
Yeah.
And Raquel and I think one of the Sunset Park people, actually, and some other tenants, organizers. There's a new book out called Capital City. It's a new, like, verso book about displacement. It's a really good panel discussion, and I want to drop that in this episode show notes.
Yeah.
If folks are interested, especially New York folks, you should know that there is a tenants' rights org in whatever neighborhood you're in.
Yeah.
That you can join, or at the very least, signal boost on social media.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
It actually does work. Like, yeah. You know, our tenants group, we're all banding together. It's an extremely diverse group, and it's really cool to go to the meetings and see and meet all your neighbors, and then all collectively put pressure on your city council person to be like, are you committed to universal rent control? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Like, you know, are you committed to loft tenants? Yes or no? Like, you know.
Yeah.
It's a really powerful force, and it works, and it's crazy, and
yeah,
check it out, everyone.
Yeah.
Plug.
Yeah. It is, it gives me a lot of hope.
Yeah.
Right? To watch people organize and to watch people win.
Yeah.
And I think that this is it's an exciting time to be in New York, especially the DSA's rise has helped refocus energies. I mean, and there's a national stage, right? But man, yeah. That gets so fucking depressing watching that asshole tweet all the time and you're like piss on our country. So as he has really like ascended or descended, whatever.
Yeah.
I've found solace in local politics, where you can certainly make a change here in New York City. You know,
that's definitely true. And do you want to talk about how betrayed a lot of DSA people felt about Julia Salazar?
Yeah.
And what ended up happening with all of that?
Yes, I do.
Because I don't know like the super details, but basically Julia Salazar was this big hope for a lot of lefty DSA New York people.
Yeah, and she really went back on her word.
And then she was sort of part of like pitting the factory workers against the loft tenants. Do you want to talk about that more?
Sure, yeah. So New York City Loft Tenants, which I'm a member of, it's an all-volunteer organization. We've been around like 10 years. And it was just a bunch of loft tenants got together and were like, well, we fucking need to organize or we're going to get wiped out here. So it happened. We have been working on this new law for 3 years. Right? And we got everybody on board. We got the Senate, we got the Assembly, we got the Governor, we got the Mayor, we got City Council, we got the fucking Department of Buildings, which are goddamn...
That's wild.
They are not easy people. They're prickly at best, and they don't fucking answer to any tenant group. They're like, you know, how do you even get my number? You know, that's like what they always want to know is like, who gave you my number? That's not allowed. You can't call the Department of Buildings, right?
Dang,
yeah.
God.
We got them on board with this new law. It's all set to go. The Senate goes Democrat, right? It goes Democrat by a long
and
shot.
And actually Democrat, right?
Right.
Like the Blue Dog Democrats,
yeah.
Who are Republicans.
Right. IDC.
The IDC were voted out.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, it's fucking like people are throwing parades. People are going nuts. They're like, oh, my God, we can finally pass some progressive legislation in this goddamn state. Because, you know, real estate money has bought Republican control of the Senate for a long time and blocked everything. Everything is good to go. De Blasio has come out and said, we want to keep the arts in New York. We want this new loft law. He visited a loft down at 475 Kent, had a press conference there about how important, you know, it is that we keep artists in New York, because if they leave, then it's just fucking Des Moines with a bunch of bankers, you know? Right?
He said that?
Yes.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, there was like a whole cultural initiative thing that came out. It was amazing.
So it's great, right? We got everything going. So now, you know, January 1st, like they're all switching offices. All the Republicans are going home. Everybody's cry for you, you know. They really did some like office sabotage, et cetera, as they were leaving. Boo-hoo. And then they start passing the big bills like agenda and making, you know, transgendered rights, you know, protecting them in New York, making sure that if the Supreme Court rolls on Roe versus Wade, that it's still legal in New York no matter what, it's ironclad.
Right. Yeah.
Gun control, like all the fucking big ones, right? Just like huge ones that New York's been waiting to do for decades. Because the Senate hasn't been this Democratic in over 100 years.
Yeah.
Right?
Wild.
So it's a big deal. So our bill is the first housing bill up, right? Because people are getting evicted all the time. they're just getting pushed out. And especially after the Senate went blue, all the landlords were like, get them out before we have rent stabilized tenants and we can't sell and build giant glass know, buildings. So they're evicting people left and right. And Julia Salazar fights us to become the Senate bill sponsor, right? We had been with this guy named Marty DeLon before her. Marty had a lot of flaws. I'm not going to be the first to say it. He took a lot of real estate money back in the day, but he was an advocate for the arts in New York, and he really fought for our bill. Salazar beats him. Okay, that's how it goes, right? The new face.
Yeah.
We don't want to sponsor our bill with Salazar because she's brand new. Like, the way the Senate works is seniority, right? If you've been there a long time, you get a say. If you're brand new, you get no say. So we were like, we want to be with somebody a little more senior who knows what's going on. Like, she's brand new. She fights us, and she's like, we absolutely must have this bill. This is super important. We are pro-tenant. I ran on pro-tenant advocacy. We're like, okay, if you're going to be a fighter, then take the bill. Great. Then fast forward January. Everything's looking good. It's coming together. We're trying to get the votes and get everything on the table. The hardest part is getting on the table because they're passing so much historic legislation right now. And you're like, oh, my God, you know, of course we want to keep kids safe in schools. That goes first. You know, of course, you know, we want to make sure that abortion is available. OK, that goes first. You know, and a million other issues, like making sure the animals can't be beaten and stuff, you know. And it's finally our turn to go. I talked to Julia Salazar on a Thursday night. She's like, absolutely. There's been some rumors that she might want to make changes to the bill. And I was like, no, no, no. Like, we have, this is the craziest Jenga. This is the craziest Jenga model ever, right? That we have built over years and got everybody on board. Every single period and comma and every little and is placed in just the right place. And it's this house of cards balanced very finely. And you said you were on board with it. And that's why we work together. She's like, absolutely, don't worry. We're not going to make any amendments. We're going to go forward. Sunday night, I get a call from Politico, right? There's a reporter writing a story that says, hey, just wanted a quick comment on Julia Salazar changing the Loflaw bill.
Shut up.
Right? And I was what did you say? She's like, yeah, just a quick comment, you know? And I was like, did you say she's changing it? They were supposed to phone on the fucker the next day, on Monday.
Oh.
It was supposed to be a fucking law the next day.
Fuck.
Right?
Wow. So that's so fucked. Everybody has to. Everybody has to know that this is like the fucking electeds.
Yeah. You
know, they can always pull this shit. It's so insane.
Yeah.
That's so fucked up.
Yeah. And so she does this. She changes the bill. What we found out was that, in fact, she lied to us on Thursday when she'd called. She'd already put the amendment in because it takes a few days to go through. So in addition, it wasn't some misunderstanding. It was directly, I would say, dishonest behavior.
Julia?
Did she apologize for lying ever?
No.
Why would she do that?
So I would just say that I'm not going to disparage her character. I will just simply state the facts that she spoke dishonestly to us. We're not happy, right?
Yo, that fucking sucks. Because I would say, so I was at the North Brooklyn DSA meeting when they were deciding to endorse her or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I was like the only person in that room who had like critical things to say. Not like, because there are people who are critical of like electeds in general in the room, but I was there and I was like, does she have Debbie Medina's endorsement? That's what I cared about, because I was like, Debbie Medina is an actual like extremely left tenants rights organizer who was like smeared to shit, you know, by the fucking, as you know, that guy before her,
Marty DeLon,
who took a lot of real estate money and was kind of, you know, he's not the best. He's kind of a scumbag.
I would say that he's a complicated character.
Yeah.
That, you know, like, that's one of the things I've really learned about politics in Albany is nobody's clean.
Yeah,
right?
Of course.
And so that he is fighting for loft tenants and artists on one side, taking real estate money on the other side, and then working some other deal in the middle.
Of course.
And so...
But I liked Debbie Medina because she was, like, directly... like had huge wins in like big tenants buildings and has just a consistent advocate for decades.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, does she have Debbie Medina's endorsement? And they're like, couldn't give me an answer.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is skeptical to me. I don't know, guys.
Yeah.
Like, who is this person, you know, with kind of rich girl from Columbia? I don't know.
Like, from Florida.
Or I went to Columbia University, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then I'm like, I don't know. Yeah. Oh, and from full, not even from New York. Oh, God. Oh, boy.
Yeah. So yeah. I would encourage anyone, if they are interested in learning Julia Salazar's history.
Yeah.
It's very easy. Google away. And there's a lot to see there. And if you doubt my word about what happened, then I recommend Googling to find out some history about Senator Salazar. And that can really lead you to your own conclusions about her motivations and New York City loft tenants' motivations.
That said, I think she can be pushed. And I know a lot of people who are friendly with her who should be pushing her. Like, while she's in office, we got to be on top of this. And yeah, we should demand an apology from her. Yeah. Honestly.
Yeah, she is. It's an interesting thing because the bill's still not passed.
Yeah.
Knowing that she was evicting people, knowing that that she was dismantling something that it took years to put together, she buckled to the forces of City Councilman Reynoso, who has been, I would say that's another Google for you to find out where Reynoso gets money from.
Yo, that sucks too, because he's also like one of the more progressive, state senator, whatever.
Yeah. He's a city councilman.
City council.
Yeah. He's a Bushwick city council.
But yeah, he's Bushwick and part of Ridgewood. Not my part, but
yeah.
He's great on certain things, but then, yeah, it's like these weird sort of curveballs sometimes. All of them have this, yeah, like you're saying.
Yeah.
They all have weird complications.
Yeah. So Boris Santos used to work for Reynoso, was a community organizer for him, and then is now Julia Salazar's chief of staff. Boris is young and very easily excited, I would say, and likes to yell, likes to call people names, has called me personally a sleazeball, right? Like, I'm a fucking volunteer fighting for affordable housing in New York. Like, I'm many things, but I'm not a sleazeball. It's like, for starters, if I was a sleazeball, I'd be getting paid, right? This is just cost money. there's a great Gothamist article. We did a protest at Julia Salazar's office. Shit got out of hand. Like, there's a near riot. Boris Santos freaked the fuck out. He was jumping around, calling people names, screaming at us. And this is the chief of staff for a senator, right? So he's representing, he's yelling at constituents who are about to be evicted. And there's been no public apology. Boris kind of gave me a half-hearted private apology because Julia made him. But you should just, you know, he insulted a bunch of people who are losing their homes. And then was very callous about it. It was just like, you guys are gentrifiers. And we're like, whoa, right? This is crazy.
It's like, okay, it's conflict. It's so
those are
silly.
Just broad strokes.
It's
man.
Such broad strokes because this is a much more nuanced thing that's happening.
Yeah.
Like, these are like, you know, how long have you lived in the city? Like,
I've been in the same warehouse for 12 years.
Yeah. It's like, where are people supposed to go? Like,
yeah.
Seriously, like
the thing that is really I find disturbing is that Reynoso, with Salazar's help, have whipped up a bunch of other tenant groups that are great groups, right? New York City Loft Tenants is part of the larger housing coalition, which we finally organized. I mean, we, when I say we, is like tenants, right? Have because New York City is small, you know, part of it, loft tenants are small. Mostly Met Council on Housing and this group called Real Rent Reform, which is a bunch of groups together. We finally organized the whole fucking state, right? From Rochester, Buffalo, Ithaca, all of them, Albany, everybody together to fight for universal rent control. It took forever because they have so much money that they fought us for so long. We finally get everybody on the same page, and right when that happens, Reynoso pops up and tries to, like, split a wedge in the middle of the tenant group and turns many fucking great organizations against us, like Los Suras, Make the Road, St. Nick's. These are, like, great organizations that we have worked with in the past that we were on the same page as. gets them to turn against us and say we're stealing manufacturing jobs, which is totally bananas and bullshit because these people have already lived in empty warehouse spaces for years. No manufacturing jobs wanted to move there. No one was being pushed out. And they come up with these bullshit things. Reynoso writes a big Twitter post. Again, Twitter, I hate it. Right? And then calls us the white gentrifiers who are stealing people of color's jobs. Which
is because they're trying to do some sort of like private public partnership where they like have some fucking deal with a manufacturer to come to Brooklyn and then they get some sort of like kickbacks. Like, it's not ideal to like these types of manufacturing, like, yeah. Like politicians are obsessed with chasing after these like manufacturing jobs.
Well, that's an interesting aspect of this whole situation though, because the manufacturing possibilities in our city have been suppressed, and we are experiencing like this influx of kind of a lot of like luxury retail, luxury dining, luxury living.
Go after that instead of the people who.
No, of course. But it's like we never attack the luxury sector. And it's like, how do you make space for both affordable housing and manufacturing when like, you know.
I tell you what, you make these people who are living illegally rent stabilized tenants, right? Because that is affordable housing free. You don't have to build anything new.
Right.
You just let them stay where they live.
And that was like what the original loft laws were supposed to do.
And that's what we're trying to do right
now. And it's also in Ridgewood, in probably Reynoso's district, there are buildings that are still active in manufacturing that are getting pushed out by the fucking scumbag landlords. Yeah. Go after them.
Yeah.
Go after the protect the ones that are like getting pushed out now and like soon rather than like make these weird like new manufacturing companies come in. Like why are people trustworthy of these new companies? Like who the fuck knows? It could be some fucking Amazon subsidiary. Like we don't fucking know.
There's a great example. Okay. There's a building on Johnson, and Johnson, for those who don't know, is in North Brooklyn, and it's right on the edge of what is called the IBZ, the Industrial Business Zone, which was New York's attempt to create a zone that was just manufacturing, except for the fact that a bunch of people already lived inside it in warehouses when they made their zone. Right? So these people have hidden out and lived illegally, lived in the shadows so that they don't get evicted, right? There's this building on Johnson, has 80 tenants in it right now. It's a fucking one of the hubs of New York for the arts and, I mean, the community center. They run a soup kitchen out of it. It's an amazing place, right? The landlord is attempting to push them out right now, has threatened to burn them out, has said that they will, you know, hire lawyers to sue them, which they have, and all in the attempt to get them out and rent to WeWork, which just took a visit of there, right? And when you talk about who is displacing who and how this works, like manufacturing not coming back there, right? It is too expensive. But places like WeWork will wipe out whole neighborhoods. This is like one of the largest tenants in the world right now is WeWork, who, you know, they rent massive amounts of space, pay tons of money, and then nobody else has a shot.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like the artist folks who use WeWork, do not use WeWork. Like I need to just say that to anybody who might be listening. Do not use them. Do not take like I'm very skeptical of like artist studio groups because I feel like some of them are too accepting of public-private partnerships and like these sort of things. And like when like I know like when Amazon was moving here, part of the thing that they said was like, oh, we'll give studio space to artists. And it's just like the artists who accept that sort of thing. Yeah. Those are gentrifiers. Like, I'm sorry. Like, do not live in spaces like that. Do not work in spaces like that. Just don't.
It's difficult, right? It is.
But it's like, I also don't want to put a pin on like, individual, whatever. Like I get like there are extenuating circumstances why people have to have things, but for my two cents, I think stay out of that shit.
Yeah, I mean, why, you know, there's an entire lobby for people to stand up for workers' rights, but why aren't the arts considered valuable enough to stand up for, and why is that always first thrown under the bus, like, you could do that anywhere? Right? Well, no, we have an entire warehouse district where artists are already entrenched. They have lived there long term, and they use this to make their work. And why are you kicking them out? Why don't you value that work? You know, this is something that drives me. And this is something, you know, I've met with Reynoso before, super dismissive of what the arts culture brings to New York. It's just like, well, you know, I remember before artists lived there. And I was like, as a matter of fact, you don't, because they've been there since the 70s or 60s in Brooklyn. And that's older than you.
Yeah. I visited John Kessler's studio in Williamsburg. He's been there since the early 80s or late 70s, I forget. It used to be a paint factory, and then it was defunct. And I haven't been, this was like 7 years ago or so, so who knows if he's still there. But that's, I don't know, that's just one that came to my head.
Yeah.
Of Brooklyn artist amazing, who's been right? there for decades.
So. Yeah. He's surrounded by like hotels now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah.
And that's the hotels. The hotels are the these are the things. Like, I don't know why we're pitting two different types of working class people against each other, because it's like that's the thing.
That's it, right? That is capitalism 101, and they are playing us right now.
Yeah,
right. The real estate interest has teamed up with manufacturing, and they in fact have the same lobbyist. This is what is great: a bunch of rich landlords funded by lawyers. Right, who evict tenants, who get paid because they evict tenants. They hired a fancy lobbyist named Tom McMahon. Now, I'm not going to disparage Tom's character, but...
But he is a lobbyist.
Right? A lobbyist, I think, is enough to say that. You know, there's a special place for him in the afterlife, and it's quite warm. But that lobbyist also works with the group, Evergreen, that is representing the manufacturing interest, and they are working together. In fact, he forwards their emails to our politicians, right? And you're like, it doesn't get any more transparent than that, that you are the displacing voice in North Brooklyn right now, and you've rallied all these good groups and got them pissed off because they, you know, the major thing that the complaint is that it's all white people. And so, you know, we have a meeting with the other tenant groups, and we're like, look, here's a bunch of people of color that live in lofts, because it's not fucking, you don't have to have like a race card to move into a loft, because it's like a house, right? It'd be like only white people live in apartments, you know? This is like race and apartments are different. It doesn't matter, you know? So we get all these people of color to come talk to them, and then they have another issue. Then they're like, it's unsafe. And then they have another issue that it's like, well, how long have you been there? And then another, and you start to see that what's really going on is there will never be like a compromise, because it's the real estate industry pushing from the outside and feeding them false facts. And Salazar is all caught up in it right now. And some people called her mean names online because some people got evicted because of it. And then they called her like a real estate prostitute. And then she went fucking buck wild, which I don't think is a good idea to call anybody names online or in general. But she went wild and like started posting stuff like she called us monsters and liars and crazy shit.
So what's the current, like, how is your guys' relationship right now?
We don't talk. Yeah. I saw her up in Albany last week. We spoke very briefly. I said, look, I know some people said some crazy shit about you online, and I want you to know we don't stand up for that. We don't abide by that. And certainly, no, we don't want to call you names. And she said, thank you.
Right.
That was it.
She seems kind of like reserved, so I feel like that's something.
Yeah. But if you're interested, tomorrow, Met Council on Housing, the oldest tenant organization in New York City, right? They've been around 60 years. They're the best. I love them. They are having a big annual meeting, and Salazar is speaking, and you can bet your ass a bunch of loft tenants are going to be in the front row.
Oof.
Yeah.
That's interesting. We'll keep an eye on that development for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad. I thought that there was a more amicable situation starting to happen, but... No.
She has spoken dishonestly to us numerous times, saying that a deal had been struck. We were ready to go. It's all in the pipe. And then, like, the next day, her chief of staff will email some crazy things to us asking for different changes.
And who the fuck is – who's she hiring? Why isn't she hiring DSA people in her – if she's supposed to be so DSA?
He is.
He is?
I'll tell you this. He wears a shirt that says socialist, right, a button that says socialist. And I was like – motherfucker, I'm 43 years old, and the first time I got to register to vote, I registered as a goddamn communist and got put on a list by the FBI in the 90s because if you registered as a communist, they automatically assumed you're a fucking terrorist. And you want to tell me that you're wearing a shirt that says socialist, so you're a socialist? Fuck you! You know? Yeah.
I know one of the things that they were trying to weaponize was like, oh, well, all these folks pay $2,500 a month, and they could live anywhere on that rent. Do you want to refute that?
Absolutely. The current average rent in Bushwick is $2,700, right? So he'd come out and said $2,000. If your family can afford to pay $2,000, then you should move someplace else, right? And it was like, you fucking move someplace else, right? The average rent is $2,700. You're talking about pushing a family out. What are you talking about? That's ridiculous, you know? Yeah. You're directly talking about evicting live-work tenants from their homes.
And I also want to stress, this is live-work. So that's your studio rent and your housing rent together.
Yeah.
People need to understand that.
You lose your house and you lose your job. So, I mean... It is, as you can tell, I'm a little bit hot. You know, I'm very passionate about it because I just can't explain it. Like, we had it all together. It was supposed to pass the next day, and she threw us under the bus, and then has since just been on the attack. And we're like, who are you working for? Right? Because it is certainly not tenants. And then she, you know, will say things like, protecting our community and our jobs. And you're like, jobs? Right?
No, I want to know more about these jobs. Now
exactly.
I want to look
and
more.
And she throws
into
around
it.
This phony baloney number, like 20,000 jobs. So the Gothamist like did an investigative report and they're like, actually the industrial jobs are 3,000 and some of those are held by loft tenants. And you're like, okay. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. Oh my God.
What a big mess.
What a big mess.
Anyway, that was a lot of dirt I just dished. So sorry if
cut it all.
Yeah. I don't mind. This is all public stuff.
No, this is great. I think people need to understand that electeds aren't the, you know, everybody, especially DSA types, right? They get all like in a frenzy about like, oh yeah, finally we have a DSA candidate.
Yeah.
Yes, 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 yes.
We do. AOC.
Yeah. Yeah. We have AOC, but it's like, there's so many limits to the electeds, like, and they can so easily be swayed by this, and there's if we really want to, like, democratize people's situations, we have to, like, really keep pushing them, not in, like, tangible ways. Like, I found a lot of hope. I know this is, like, also a really fucked up, scary time. We got fucked up mass shooters. That just happened yesterday in Christchurch, New Zealand. I've rewatched, so earlier this month, Stefan Clark's brother in Sacramento, California. Stefan Clark was murdered by the police, and his brother has been doing these like really powerful demonstrations at like the mayor's office and city council hearings, where he'll like get up on the desks and like demand that like people be held accountable for this. And like, he's got like a group of like non-black allies that are there to like be between him and the police. And it's like this very like powerful, like we have to hold them all accountable. Like, and these really showing up to these hearings. Like, I know there's like so many hearings to keep track of, but that's, you know, when you have a tenant organization, that's where you go to learn this stuff. You don't if there's a group that's putting together the information, follow the group, you know. You don't have to feel like you have to know everything all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there, if we stand back and let inertia and momentum ride in this country, fascism will take place. We're seeing that, right? Just as clear as day. And it is up to us to become active and to fight back. And the most effective way that I've found is to do that in a personal way and in the streets of my city, you know. So it makes me excited that we're in a country that where that's still possible. And I feel like, you know, I'm less worried about Trump. I'm more worried about what's Cuomo doing right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Amazon Cuomo, everyone's favorite guy. You know, Reynosa was the guy who was, you remember when we ran into de Blasio?
Yeah.
So Reynosa was the guy who was like trailing de Blasio when he left. And I was like, are you going to push him on congestion pricing? Mm-hmm. And Reynosa was like, we're talking about it or whatever.
Consider it.
We're trying.
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. It is, you know, I will say this, though, about Senator Salazar. She has done a good thing by moving the needle to pressure politicians not to take real estate money.
Yes.
And that is a great thing. She did not do it alone, but she is a large part of that. She's called out publicly for other senators like Mike Gennaris, and many others to stop taking real estate money and just take small donations from people, you know. So that is good, and I give her a lot of credit for that, and I think we need more of that.
Well, Lucia, do you want to talk about your history of living in lofts?
Oh, geez. I mean, well...
Anyway, back to us.
Yeah.
Because I've never lived in a loft. You have?
Yeah, I've lived in lofts basically my entire time in New York, and I've been through fires. And I've lived in places that had no heat. I lived in a loft where the side of the building fell off while I was in it because a bunch of black mold just like crept through the entire structure. I've signed a lease once or twice. I never know what kind of tenant organization I'm supposed to join or who's supposed to have my back or where. Yeah, I've just sort of been like, I give up on this whole thing. And it's been hard for me, like, because I'm one of the people who's like, no, like I came here and the city, I'm just like, no, the city's not on my side and the city is a cunt. And like, I'm just here until it destroys me. So anytime I hear like the conversation about like, yeah, we're all gonna like have this like solidarity, I'm just sort of like, all right, just, I don't know what to do. And everyone is like, just, you know, well, we've got this thing going. And I've just spent the past, 12 years, I guess, just being like, I don't know what I'm, where am I supposed to show up? Like what, how, oh, you know what? Forget it. But that's, you know, so I try to keep it down. Cause I'm like, maybe it's fine.
Yeah.
I don't know though. You know, I don't let it get to me. It's just listening, you know?
Well, I know that I know every organization is different, but my experience with the tenants' union in Ridgewood is it's very welcoming of all types of people. It's not judgmental of people who might be perceived as gentrifiers to certain folks. It's very like, whatever. Like we're all here and we're all here now, and that's what's important. And we're just gonna all figure this out together. I know. It could be scary.
I mean, that's the kind of thing, though, that I'm talking about. It's like, Cool, dude. That's like really cool that that's in Ridgewood.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I know.
Like, that's the kind of thing that it's like people continuously are like, oh, my God, in the neighborhood that I've lived in and I've been in the same place for years and years. And I've like I'm really entrenched in my neighborhood and I've got all these cool things that I like. And for me, basically every year, every 2 years, I have to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
I have lived all throughout Manhattan. I've lived in abandoned buildings. You know, I've lived all throughout Brooklyn, north and south. I've lived in Queens. Like, every year I change a place. Yeah. I don't know where I'm supposed to show up. And I know that there are people living the same way as me, but and they're probably better informed. But I've just sort of been like, oh, my God, don't tell me that I have to go
dreadful.
Further to show up to a place where I can, like, support people in Ridgewood having homes. Because
oh,
it's
no,
just
I'm
like,
not saying, I just, all I'm saying is my experience. I'm just saying that's my experience, but I don't know what other ones are like.
Yeah, mine has just been, like, ridiculous. Yeah. I kind of am like, oh, I don't know. I thought it would be cool to, like, have a bed frame one day, you know?
Someday.
It's like, that's my next...
I just picture you, like, wearing a burlap sack and, like, sleeping on a dead pony.
Yeah, right? No, I sleep on a mattress on the floor because I used to sleep in a loft, and then I was like, oh, it's sick. I don't have to get, like, a bed frame. And now I'm just in a regular apartment, so it's just a mattress on the floor, and I have a bookshelf. That's it. But I know that there are a lot of people who are living that way, and I don't, you know, I'm not like, ooh, help. It's just like, this is a lifestyle too, and it's confusing, like, what all of these people just, you know, the electrons of the city who are just, like, jetting around everywhere, like, what are these people supposed to do?
Yeah.
Because it's scarring, and it's, like, sort of the, I've just decided to put my energy elsewhere in terms of, like, what I'm gonna...
Crime.
Into crime, yes. Occasional crimes.
No, people do need to... It's a really important perspective that people need to understand that, like, folks who have been continually pushed out, it's not an uncommon experience. There are tons of people exactly like you who have never been on a lease, who are constantly having to move for all sorts of bullshit reasons over and over again, every 2 years, every year, like, you know, whatever it is. And, like, all over the city, all over the fucking map, you're just, like, whisked away. Like, oh, I found a cheap... Like, you know, we met someone yesterday. It was like, yeah, I live in Washington Heights because I've just found a spot there. And I just took, like, it's like who knows?
Totally.
Where you end up
sometimes. You don't know, like, where, you know, so it's hard to say, like, you know, getting attached to the DSA and everything. Like, okay, well, where's your branch? Like, where do you get active? And it's like, I pop in here and there, wherever I live, I try to get to know people. And then when you have to move every year, there's, like, a month of your life where you just look at Craigslist all the time and you try to find a place where you're not getting, like, first and last and security. And then, you know, if you have anything that you're bringing with you, if by chance you have a partner or something, you know what I mean?
If you're trans or disabled or, like...
And it's just,
or black, or, like, you're more likely to not get a room in a shared house, for example, or if you have a cat, if you, like, you know, if you're, like, if you're somebody who can't afford a full apartment, so you're, like, looking at 2 bedrooms, 3 bedroom, 4 bedrooms, and you're trying to move in, and you have, like, there's all these things that can be used against you to getting that room.
I think that, you know, one of the main things that I think about is your experience is very harrowing, right? But it is also a shared experience with many people. And this is really, it seems as if it is this random force pushing everybody at the same time, but it is not. It is engineered, right?
Oh, totally. I can see the mechanism.
We have an affordable housing crisis that puts insane amounts of pressure on people, and they have to get what they can get wherever they can get it. And then they turn working class people against each other and do things such as say, like, you're different than these people because they're a different color skin than you, or they're an artist, and that's bullshit anyway, right? Who can make a living with art? That's nothing. And then they get working class people to fight amongst each other, while the real demon behind it is this kind of massive greed from capitalism that is, you know, scarring people all around, such as yourself, who have to move all the time because of the incessant pressure, and it fucking drives me nuts.
Yeah, I mean, it drives me nuts, too, and, like... I especially just gaining the ability increasingly to see the way that all of these things line up and hearing these conversations around me all the time, like, oh no, of course, like, we're attempting to apply pressure here, we're trying to apply pressure there. Like, a part of being able to show up, and I know I don't want it to seem like I'm giving myself an excuse or something, but there is, like, some stability necessary to be able to show up for these activities, like to actually like know where to protest or how to pinpoint an elected, like you have to have the free time to get to know your enemy. You have to like be able to situate yourself and know the demands that you need to make for your neighborhood to be secured. You have to have a connection to a place to fight for it. And it's almost like sometimes the depression can be so deep that it's sort of like the nihilism can set in of just being like, the city is already dead. Fuck it. And then you get like all of those like supporting voices of people who will start saying like, you know, we were just reading this article from another guest from the show, Matthew Thurber, and he's talking about like how the vanguard of art should just move to Maine because the city is dead. And, you know, he himself, I think, it like moved upstate and is just sort of like not participating in this community anymore because, you know, there's like this certain threshold where bitterness takes over and it's like, oh man, you know what? Like New York isn't the dream that I wanted it to be and fuck this. And like, I'm not there.
Yeah.
But I'm also in that weird sort of twilight zone where it's like, I have the desire to mobilize and I'm very confused because everyone will be like, join me. And it's like, and it's too many different directions. So then it just sort of gets overwhelming. And then it's just sort of like, you know what? Can't right now.
Well, you're doing this, which is a thing.
Oh, totally. But it's, yeah, I mean,
propaganda.
I want to participate where I can, but it's also like, I know that my experience is shared and I know where the issues are coming from. And, you know, I've stopped blaming myself for like not being able to have, you know, this place where it's like, yeah, I've been living here for the whole time I was in the city. Or, you know, it's just like, okay, I'm a little tumbleweed and everyone else is, for the most part, it's actually more common probably than having a lease for more than like 5 years.
100%. Yeah. And this is by design.
Yeah. I mean, I beat up myself all the time for not going to things enough and not having time to go to more meetings for whatever things I'm interested in. You know, it's like, but you can't, like, it's like, it's such a sticky thing. Just like get the emails, read the emails, share the thing when it needs to be shared. It's okay.
But
it's
like, I just tell myself.
But it should really be a system, right, where this is encouraged. And I feel like constantly having to look for a house is a pressure placed on you by an unequal system that leaves you unable to participate. Right? Mm-hmm. You don't have the time to attach to a community because you're just being fucking pushed all the time.
Totes.
And this, I think, is something that we have to fight back against with everything we have.
Yeah. And
looking for a job, too.
Totally. Yeah.
And between those two things, it's just like, it's just forget it.
Yeah.
Looking for a job, especially one where you work on a project-to-project basis, it's just like, I feel so grateful and I feel like I'm actually resting now because I have a job that is like not going to end in the foreseeable future.
You're fired.
Fuck. That's what I'm out.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, if we had our shit together a bit more, maybe this podcast would actually make a little money. But someday.
There's that.
We do get to go cool places because of it, which is really neat.
Yeah.
Lucia is going to be going to Chicago.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. We went to Chicago before, but
we'll go to Chicago again after that.
No, we'll just keep going to Chicago. But I mean, we went to Columbia. We went to Indianapolis.
Cool.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah. And that's
Columbia,
that's
the very, country.
Yeah, no, the fucking school again.
Ah,
talking
okay.
about the school again.
That's cool. Yeah, the city on the hill,
dilapidated.
I would love to squat one of Columbia's buildings.
You should, because yeah. we went in, yeah. into one and it was so empty, and
it was a mess.
I ran into my friend,
Hall.
My friend the other day. She told me that she used to squat in NYU practice space.
Oh, wow.
So that's another tip for people.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would also recommend people check out the Museum of Reclaimed Urban Space.
Okay.
That's on Avenue C and 10th Street.
Okay.
And they have a lot of resources for people looking to find a house to live in.
Yeah.
Let's just say.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that... one of the false dichotomies, I think, as well, is that business doesn't feel this pressure as well. And this, I think, is not true, because you see many, many vacant storefronts and the city grappling with, like, how to get businesses back in there. You know, nobody wants an empty neighborhood with no bodegas, no businesses, no nothing. And one of the things that's been floated that I think would be very effective and would get tenants and businesses on the same side, which scares the fuck out of real estate developers, right?
Yeah.
Is would be a rent control for businesses, like commercial rent control.
Yeah.
Right? Ooh. And so that you could say, you know, in Soho, this is the base level rent. Nobody pays higher than that. You know, in North Brooklyn, this is base level. Nobody pays higher than that.
Yeah, they've been trying to pass that in Soho for a while. Just, I mean, all the flagship store real estate that's going empty now is just such a bad look for Broadway.
Right.
Like, yeah.
And
yeah.
So, like, how long will we let outside speculators ruin our town and push people out, right, before we take some drastic action? And you know that tenants, even larger tenants like corporations and things like that, would agree on some base rules for rent, right? Because Target wants a deal, right? Yeah. So they would support like a $10,000 base level rent or some shit like that. I don't know. But
These are things. This is like another contradiction of capitalism that's really easy to point out. Like, you know, housing, healthcare, I think are the big ones that are really easy to point out to people. Like, these are things that that should not have a growth model.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make sense that it has a growth model.
Yeah.
And it's very, very, very harmful to people because it has a growth model.
Yeah, yeah.
And harmful to basically everybody.
Yeah.
Except for a small group of, like, 400 wealthiest families in the country, you know?
Yeah. And I also think that if you want to buy a gun, they should have to chop off one of your hands. And then you can buy a handgun.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and you can buy two, but then you got no hands.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Right? And they're like, fair's fair. You know, you want a gun? Okay.
Yeah, but what? So wait, do the cops have the same rule then?
Yeah.
The cops have to have no hands.
And then their new nickname is Handy.
We got to get
call the Handy Man.
New handcuff scenarios
exactly,
going on.
Exactly, right?
Then.
Elbow cuffs, very hot.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we're going to have, like, Shibari cops.
Wow.
That yeah. would be so wild. They're like, suspend him.
Oh, my gosh. It was so lovely talking with you, Zephyr. Is there any upcoming projects that you want to talk about on air before we wrap up?
For New York City Loft Tenants?
I mean, for yourself or the Loft Tenants.
For Loft Tenants, I would say right now, if you're living in a space that is not covered, an industrial space, right now you can have direct action that could possibly get you a legal status, right? That you can have a rent-stabilized apartment for life that you can pass on to your kids. Right now, we're trying to pass that law. And Julia Salazar is the thing standing in the way. So if you have any sway with her, call her up and tell her to pass that fucking loft law. Right,
yeah.
She knows what we're talking about because she gets hundreds of calls all the time, but is really holding our bill hostage for some mystery industrial uses. Secondarily, I would say I'm a filmmaker, and if somebody wants to film on your block, don't fucking hassle the set. They had to pay to be there, right? They're only going to be there a day or two. Be nice to them, okay? Don't walk through the fucking shot because there's a fucking 100 people who are trying to just do one beautiful thing for you for a half a minute so that you can watch it on Netflix.
Oh.
So go easy on the goddamn film crew.
and sneak a carrot from the crafty.
Right? Yeah. You can have all the craft you want. I don't care. Just yeah, don't
that's
fucking
a good
interrupt.
Deal. That's yeah. a good deal. You can't leave those muffins out and expect things to be cool.
I always try to steal a granola bar when I pass a crafty.
Right? Yeah, yeah. And imagine like this. Like, what if, like, let's say you work at an office and some, like, random stranger were to walk into your office and, like, stand in front of your cubicle and be like, hey, what are you doing? Right? Yeah. That's what it's like on a film set when you fucking bug us. Like,
yeah, yeah. But it's still, I mean, they're so magical. Film's not real life. You get to screw with them because it's like an amusement park.
Yo, yeah. It's pretty crazy. Like, one time I was walking by and they were filming, like, some Marvel thing, and then they were doing, like, fake rain on the ground and shit, and I was like, this is crazy. I'm gonna watch this for a bit.
Yeah,
I don't mind, like, people watching, totally great. I love that, right? But, like, people always want to get in the mix, and, like, are stopping the thing from happening that you're interested about. Yeah, yeah.
Understandable.
And unless, of course, that you want to be on set and then we'll put you in a flak jacket and everybody starts shooting at you, you know, like yeah. With one
yeah,
hand.
I was like, what kind of movie is this?
Fuck.
Anyway, thank you so much for having me on. You guys are great. Hey. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and we'll put, you know, your social medias for the Loft Tenants and yourself and whatever. And
my social security number.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and that'll all be in the show notes. All right. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Support us on Patreon or whatever. Take care.
Yeah, lots of fun.
I get if you have an aeroplane that can fly the world and we can have a fantasy. It doesn't really matter if you drive a limousine. It really doesn't matter if you drive for galaxy. I really don't care if you just drive a truck. I get if you just drive a drive a Ferrari. I really don't care cause I just love your company. Let's have fun. 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 Lots of fun. Let's have fun. Let's have fun. Let's have fun. Lots of fun. Let's have fun.